This episode is brought to you by Pandora. Pandora's Mother's Day 2024 collection comes with an invitation to be love, to embody it and live it on Mother's Day and every day. For me, motherly love has been the biggest presence throughout my life. From watching my Italian nonna feed our huge family, to appreciating the way that my mum is one of the strongest, most generous, and sassiest people I've ever met. I hope that I can embody love like these women when I become a mum this year. The new Pandora Moments collection offers meaningful gifts to thank the mother figures in our lives and reflect the love they've given us from the very start. The designs are inspired by a rich symbolic motif, the rose. I can't wait to give my mum the biggest hug this Mother's Day and give her a Pandora Be Love gift that reminds her that I'm always thinking of her, even when I'm far away. Visit au.pandora.net to see the collection. Be Love for Mother's Day with Pandora. We are walking down a beautiful suburban street in Los Angeles. The sun is back. There's big, luscious front lawns. All the houses have got that mid-century Californian architecture twang to them. So I feel like we're really here inside one of those sitcoms or movies we would have grown up watching. And of course we're here because we're visiting a very cool new friend.
Welcome.
Her name is Gabrielle Stone. She's the best-selling author of her memoir, Eat, Pray, FML.
Come on in. This is my husband, Tay. This is Linda.
Hi, I'm Linda. Sorry, I've got my little, my dork gear on already.
No, I love it.
And she's a new mom.
Baby's sleeping. He can't hear anything. It's like a womb in there. He could sleep for an hour. He could be up in 15 minutes. Whenever he is up, I'll need to pop in there to feed him for 10 minutes.
Absolutely.
But other than that.
Yeah. Like I said, I've got two best friends that have a 5-month-old and a 6-month-old.
Oh yeah, so he's 6 and a half. It's chaotic.
So it's exactly the same, and I'm also pregnant. So
congratulations!
Whoa,
thank you.
Your first?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. How exciting!
She's been through a bit of tough shit in the last few years, and she'll talk to you all about it.
Beautiful office, and you've got your book bits.
I remember when I shot this.
She'll talk to you about life after her husband's affair.
I was like, glasses, book, wine, divorce papers flying.
And over the debilitating anxiety that she experienced, and then what she did to help herself climb out of that funk.
And everyone was like, okay, cool, Gabrielle, but what the fuck happened after Europe? Like, we need to know.
So it does make me wonder, if you're in a place where the trust is broken, how do you get it back? Let's start from the fuck my life story. For people that don't know, what happened?
Yes. Where did it all go to shit, Gabrielle, is the question. So I was married for almost 2 years. And in 2017, I found out that he was having an affair with a 19-year-old for 6 months. Just uncovered a whole slew of shit with my private detective skills I did not know I had. Definitely missed my calling. And I filed for divorce, left. And shortly after that, I met a man who's a pretty well-known Hollywood actor. And we just fell madly in love with each other, went from 0 to 100 and was like, meet my family. I want to have babies with this person, like signed, sealed, delivered, done. And he invited me on a month-long trip to Italy. 48 hours before we were getting on the plane, he told me he needed to go by himself. And I was absolutely devastated. This man broke my heart like my ex-husband never could have done. But at that point, when I was sitting on my bed at my mother's house, because that's where you move when you're 28 and get divorced, I had a decision to make. And that was either stay at home heartbroken or go travel Europe for a month by myself. So I took a backpack that was already packed for the trip that I thought I was going on, took my backpack, and I did 6 countries over the span of a month. And I wrote the book Eat, Pray, FML.
You kept the sexy underwear that you'd packed in there, didn't you?
I sure did.
did you put it to use on that trip?
I sure did. Maybe more than once.
My God, you know, when you condense it down like that, that was over the period of how long?
That's the crazy part. So I found out about the affair in June of 2017, filed for divorce in July, met Javier, who's the second man in the book, in late July. So 2 weeks after I had left my house and like served my ex-husband divorce papers, we reconnected. He was actually someone I had gone on like two very casual dates with in the past and was like always just like my casual kind of thing that happened. And this was 6 years later and we reconnected. Although I had been mentally checked out of my marriage for months at that time. So it didn't feel super fast. When I left my house, I kind of felt like I was getting a second chance at life. And this was like a get out of jail, redo free card. Reconnected with Javier in late July and left for the Europe trip on September 4th, which would have been my 2-year wedding anniversary. Like from you're getting divorced to going to Europe and coming home from a month-long trip. It was like wildly quick in a very small amount of time to go through all of the things.
Describe that feeling when and how you found out.
I describe it in my book as the surge, which is kind of like when your stomach just drops out of your ass and you're like getting called to the principal's office and you're like, this is it. This is it. And I felt that many, many times. It put me into a very consistent state of debilitating anxiety from the time that I found out to the time that I was able to serve him the actual divorce papers. There was like a 2-week period where he was out of town on a work trip and I was like meeting with lawyers and realizing that my life was completely shifting from this dynamic that I had known and planned on for my future. But the moment I found out was actually in the trash email. He had left his email up on our office computer and I was in there getting stuff out of the filing cabinet and it started dinging and going off. And I went over to look at it and it was an Uber receipt for where he was supposed to be on his work trip to Miami. So like a different city in Florida all the way to Miami. And I was like, something's going on. Went to the trash email and literally found all the receipts from dating 6 months prior to hotels and couples massages and like dinners and places that he had taken me on, exact like replicas of dates, shopping sprees at places he had taken me shopping, like very like lack of originality. It was like shocking. He really said just like copy paste. I remember in that moment, the surge. We had been in therapy for a while and I was like trying really hard to get us back on track. I couldn't figure out what wasn't working. Obviously, then it became very abundantly clear. And I remember feeling betrayal and rage towards this person who I thought was, you know, my best friend and had vowed to keep me safe and, you know, had now not only disrespected our vows, but my body. Like the first thing you go through when you get cheated on is I have to go get tested. So that was a big layer of it for me, but it wasn't heartbreak. I think because I had been so mentally checked out for so long, by that time it was just the betrayal and the rage. And I was really grateful for that because adding the heartbreak on top of all of that would have been a lot. The heartbreak came after with the next man. That was reserved for him.
Hey, as you listen to this episode, have you thought about joining our Tough Love world? I'd love to have you as part of our family. When you sign up, you'll get all the new episodes early, so before the rest of the world, and you'll listen to full episodes ad-free. You'll receive my personal newsletter, bonus conversations, and more. And this year, we want to showcase your stories in a members-only series titled Tough Love, Love Stories. I am so excited for that. The Tough Love world is growing and you can be a part of it. The link is in the show notes with all the info for you.
When you had, you know, the confrontations and the conversations with the husband afterwards, Did you feel ever like you got a sense of closure or meaningfulness out of those talks?
I will say, and I write about this a little bit in the sequel to Eat, Pray, FML, I think closure is kind of your own responsibility. I don't think that you can ever bank on someone else giving you the closure that you want, need, deserve. And for me, what I realized down the road was that the disrespect was the closure. The fact that someone would do those actions to disrespect you in that way, that's the closure, that's your answer. When we did meet, when I had him served, when he got back in town, I was still trying to like kind of play dumb so he didn't know how much I knew and how much proof that I had obtained of like everything. And I found everything. Like I had documents on my computer and like we were following their trip on Snapchat. Like it was wild. Like it was like a Lifetime movie, like an episode of CSI. And I remember him looking at me and saying, you know, please don't come after my new job. He had just signed on to this really big sports place to be one of the head coaches there. And I was like, okay, well then say it. And he said, say what? And I said, say it. And he said, what, that I'm in another relationship? And that was all that he said to acknowledge what had been going on. The first portion of the conversation was just gaslighting. And like, I think we were too young. And I, obviously you and you feel the same way. And like now, you know, I'm so sorry. And I hope that like, this doesn't, you know, break you and you're able to go like accomplish your dreams and you blah, 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 blah. And that was the only time he acknowledged it. And I just looked at him and smiled and grabbed my keys and was like, okay, bye. And I drove away from that house being like, I just dodged an army of fucking snipers. Like whatever is coming for me after this is about to be massive. Like this was my like Saturn return year of ready to like open some shit up.
Did you feel like, fuck, it's going to take me a really long time to trust someone again? Or were you just like, he's a fuckwit?
I didn't.
A bit of both.
Yeah, a bit of all of the above. I didn't have the fear of, am I ever going to be able to trust someone again? What I did do in my car was go, fuck men, I'm going to be single for at least a year because I'm always jumping from relationship to relationship. And the universe went, psych, bitch, here you go.
As soon as that happened, you kind of reconnected with Javier, who's mentioned quite prominently in the second book.
Yes, he unfortunately is a large supporting character in not only Eat, Pray, FML, but also the sequel. But I do feel like that relationship was such a karmic dynamic that came in. Like, if it wasn't for that relationship, I would not have had the trip booked to Europe. I would not have ever gone and done a month-long solo trip by myself. I only did that because it was like, what other fucking option do I have? And that trip ultimately healed me as a person, like sent me on my big healing path, changed my career. Like before that, I was working as an actress and starting to direct, like completely shifted my career into what it is now. And gave me this book that has reached women all over the world and helped a lot of people heal. And for that, I would do it 10 times over.
That is something I had to ask you about, which is that feeling of you felt compelled to write it when you hadn't been an author in the past. Like, did it just start pouring out of you? Like, what happened there?
I remember vividly when I found out I was going by myself the next day, we had this Javier and I had this conversation and we were like, okay, this is really happening. Like, you're really breaking up with me. That wasn't a dream. Copy. Awesome. And I am a big believer in everything happens for a reason, but this was like, you couldn't argue how it was happening. I've always had a fear of abandonment. I lost my dad pretty traumatically when I was 6 years old. I walked in and found him dead on the floor from a heart attack. And then lost my high school sweetheart in a car accident when I was 18. So like, have always had this, when I love someone, they die. When I love someone, they leave, fear of abandonment. So this was really the universe's way of being like, okay, like the husband has abandoned you in one of the most heinous ways possible. And now this man has abandoned you quite literally right before you're getting on a plane that he invited you on. So are we ready to go heal the abandonment shit so we can attract something better in the future, Gabrielle? It was very clear that I was now going to go across the world by myself to learn how to be okay by myself and not have that fear of abandonment anymore. So I knew it was all happening for a reason. I came home from that conversation where we decided like, okay, you're really going. And I was like, I think I'm going to go too still. And I remember when he dropped me off from that conversation, I got out of my car and he was like, how are you feeling? And I was like, I'm about to go on a journey of eat, pray, fuck my life, which is obviously a satirical play on eat, pray, love, because she gallivants off to Europe. And I will say, has a much more tame journey than mine was. That is not what you will be getting when you pick up this book to read. But I just knew in that moment, I was like, and I'm going to write a book about it. And you're right. I was not an author. I mean, I could bullshit the hell out of an English essay in high school, but that was the extent of it. And I bought a leather bound journal the next day at Barnes & Noble and took it on the plane with me. And the first day I got there, I wrote my first chapter. And it's not like I was journaling and then turned it into a book. Like, you open the journal that I still have and is one of my most prized possessions. And it says chapter one. And the whole book is very close to how it ended up, is written in that journal by hand.
I want to know more about that, facing that fear of abandonment. Mm-hmm. How do you work through that? How did you do it?
I think it's... healing is not linear. So I healed a lot of my abandonment fears on that trip. I healed a lot of my abandonment fears in the relationship that I ended up in after that, who ended up being my husband. I'm still healing those abandonment fears with my child. it's never done. But going on that solo trip gave me such confidence that I was totally okay by myself and actually, dare I say, enjoyed being by myself. And the biggest gift that that trip gave me was the knowing that I'm never truly abandoned because I will never abandon myself. And when you know that deeply in your soul, it doesn't matter who dies, it doesn't matter who breaks up with you, it doesn't matter who leaves, you know that you're going to be able to be there for yourself and make it through and be okay. And there was solace in that for me. So that was the first part of me healing a lot of that abandonment.
As well as that kind of fear of abandonment, were there things that you noticed about yourself from the previous relationships compared to the one that you're in now that you really, I guess, learned or worked on?
Yeah, I think I learned to communicate a lot better. You know, I think when we're younger and we get into those relationships, we have the tendency to be like, oh, okay, well, what's going to be their move if I do this? Or like, maybe I shouldn't text back, or maybe I should like go this way and they'll want to do this more, as opposed to just coming to the table and being like, hey, this is my shit. This is what happens when you do this. So if we could go this way, it would be great. Like if we could bypass all of that and just really being open and honest with each other. I had a lot of residual weird fear around the cheating stuff, particularly with his phone, because all of the cheating happened with like shadiness on the phone. So there were times where I would pick up my husband's phone and feel the need to go through it. And it made me feel so slimy about myself, even though I knew where it was coming from. And I knew that it was something that had happened to me that, you know, left this imprint. And so we would work through that. He would be like, here's my password. Go through it whenever you want. If he was sitting next to me on his phone and would kind of like feel my eyes, he would just like slightly turn his phone to me and not say anything, like, because he knew and he was helping me work through that. So there, when you're with the right person and you can communicate what your needs and wants are, they're then able to show up for you in that way, if they're the right fit.
I love that he was slightly turning his phone towards you.
He's a gem.
With your audience now, women across the world, reading the books, listening to the podcasts, I mean, I imagine that you must have so many women reaching out with similar stories, potentially, you know, wanting advice, wanting connection. How has that felt for you?
It's been a bit overwhelming. Everyone's always like, oh, but you have an assistant. I'm like, no, I answer every DM that I get about, like, if someone's read the books, because it's such a personal journey that they're reading of mine, and I feel the responsibility to read whatever they send in regards to that. So it's been a little exhausting. I'm also like a high functioning codependent. So I feel the need to like respond to everything. And like, I'm very type A. And I also, on the flip side, love connecting with people that are connecting with something that I've put out into the world. And it means a great deal to me, but it has been a little mentally taxing to try and balance that. Especially if it's like one DM of a message of like, oh, I read the book and then, you know, blah, blah, blah. That's amazing. But there's always going to be the people that then want to have a 30-minute conversation or kind of cross that boundary in different ways. So I've had to, over the past couple of years that the book has really taken off, set some boundaries within myself of not putting so much pressure to, you know, pass a certain point with all of the people that are sliding into my DMs or writing me. It is mentally taxing to feel like you've become people's therapists when you're like, oh, I'm not trained for that. I'll preach on the podcast and take what you will. But like, I am not. It's a lot sometimes.
Do you have a therapist that you get to speak to now as well, besides being so everybody else's therapist?
I do. My husband and I, whenever we have, it's very rare, but whenever we come up to a conflict that we feel could use a third party to kind of like mediate or give their advice or opinion on, we have a great therapist that we have seen for the entirety of our relationship, but we kind of go on an as needed basis. And sometimes we each go solo for that reason as well. And she's written about in the second book, she really helped me a lot in my healing when I came back from my Europe trip.
What was that healing process?
So when I came home from Europe, it was like I had been on a wild carousel ride, and it was like the divorce, the love affair, the trip, the travel, the people you're meeting, like all of the different countries. And then you come back and you're still 28 and you're still at your mom's house and you're still getting divorced and you have now gotten off the roller coaster and everything just stopped. And I fell into like a really bad depression after that because I was like, what am I doing? What's next? Where do I go? Like, who the fuck am I? And was still very heartbroken over this relationship that had taken place and fallen apart drastically quickly. And it took me a while to pull myself out of there. And in the first book, it's written in the epilogue because it didn't come about until the second book. But my whole first Europe trip, I was really searching for how do you love yourself? Because I feel like everybody's always saying, you've got to love yourself first. Loving yourself is the most important thing. You can't love someone else until you love yourself. And I was like, okay, cool. Got it. Can anyone tell me how to do that? And everyone was like, crickets. I was like, no. Okay, cool. Guess I need to go figure this out. So I was searching for this on that Europe trip, and I found bits and pieces of it, but it wasn't until I came back and was in that really big depression that it really kind of all came together and I figured it out. And I call it the self-love cocktail. And because obviously I'm going to equate it to wine or some type of fruity cocktail. And what it is you sit down and you write out on a piece of paper all the things that you are capable of giving yourself that your soul loves. So what can you do for yourself that makes you feel happy, that like lights you up inside? For me, it was dancing, creating, like writing, meditating, going to the gym, eating healthy, like making my body feel good. And I put that list on my mirror and was like, okay, I am going to give myself one of these things every single day. And if I do one of these things, I can get back in bed and binge a Netflix show and like be sad and pissed off about whatever. And then after a week or two, I was like, okay, I'm going to do two of these things a day. And then after that, I was like, oh, I'm feeling better. Maybe I like don't need to get back in bed. Okay, I'll just do a third thing. And before I knew it, I started pulling myself out of that depression because I was loving myself. And when I realized that loving yourself is as simple as giving your soul the things it loves, it completely shifted for me and it all made sense. Before it was like, self-love is looking into the mirror and being like, I love you, Gabrielle, you're wonderful. And I was like, if you can do that, more power to you. But I felt like a fucking crazy person. First of all, I'm type A, I need a list and I need like actionable shit to do. And when you think about it, if you're wanting to show love to anyone in your life, a significant other, a parent, a friend, a brother, sister, you do things that make them experience and feel love. So when we're talking about self-love, why would you not do those same things for yourself? And it became something that I was now in control of to help love myself and make myself feel better.
For some fucking reason, a bit of self-compassion is hard to find sometimes. It can take years to cultivate that.
And I think that we're always the hardest on ourselves and we're always the last on the list. And even now, after becoming a mom, I've had to continuously remind myself that, no, it's important for me to go to dinner with my girlfriends, or it's important for me to go get my nails done, or it's important for whatever the thing is that's going to be my self-care time. It's important for me to put myself first, because then I show up better for my son.
That was what I was going to ask you, because, you know, now that you've become a mother, your child is 6.5 months old, like, quite often you hear that, you know, the mothers are selfless, or the mothers, you know, put themselves last. They've got like burnt chop syndrome, where the mother makes dinner for everybody and gives everybody the perfectly cooked piece of meat, and then just gives herself the shitty burnt thing at the end of the end of the oven. So the kind of lessons in self-love and compassion, it sounds amazing that you started that journey already before becoming a mom. And have you noticed other changes in yourself since, you know, falling pregnant and now having a new little man in your life?
Yes. It's so funny, because I was so sure I was having a daughter. I was so sure. My mom and I were like, we don't even need to get a test. Like, it's for sure. When I tell you the shock that went over us when we found out it was a boy. And then now looking back on it, I'm like, of course it's a boy. I saw this video, don't quote me on this because who knows if it's true, but that if you're having a girl, it's to heal generational trauma in your life. If you have a boy, it's to heal the trauma that men have inflicted on you in this life. And I was like, well, fuck, that tracks. Of course I'm having a boy. But yes, I mean, the biggest thing that I have noticed change-wise, you know, there's obviously the little things of like scheduling is now fucking crazy, and like you're more tired, and like your body's different, and like that's all, you know, par for the course. But for me, the biggest thing that has shifted is when I had my son, it literally felt like I don't know if I would call it a wall or the casing around my heart that has developed from all of the things I've been through in my life, that's just kind of hardened it to protect it. All of that was just ripped off, and my heart was just like open and bleeding and fresh and like very sensitive to the touch, which is great, because I all my life had expressed, you know, to my mom that I felt like I couldn't fully connect. Like, she would like try and like hug me and like look longingly into my eyes, and it would almost make me feel uncomfortable because I had this kind of reserved wall up. And that all of a sudden was ripped away, which was wonderful in a lot of ways, but it was also wildly uncomfortable at first, because it was like being like naked with flesh wounds everywhere. And you were just like, wait, what? So I'm learning to find my footing in that new way of existing. I know that it's a positive. It's just, I have to give myself grace that it hasn't been like completely comfortable after, you know, 30 plus years of having a little wall up.
Totally. I used to, you know, walk around a theme park and see toddlers with, you know, the backpacks that are actually leashes that their parents are on. And I'd be like, I'll never be one of those parents. And now I'm like, where the fuck do they get those backpacks?
You're like, I'll be damned if you fucking walk 5 feet away from me.
Seriously, what's that quote? It's like having a child is like having a heart on the outside of your body.
Yeah, having your heart exist outside of your body. And it's so accurate, and especially coming from the trauma background that I have of like the men in my life dying, I'm like, I've had to really keep on my thoughts to not like trauma brain about all the different ways my child's going to die. I'm like, it's ridiculous, because I have no proof that that's ever going to be the case, but it's definitely like an apparent fear of mine that, you know, kids, I'm a full believer that kids pick their parents, and they come down here to teach you all the fucking lessons that you need to learn, and vice versa. And that is very apparent already in the first 6 months. He's been like, okay, look, bitch, here we go.
Stop ruminating.
Yes.
something I know that you've spoken about before, and I've been thinking about this a lot too, in terms of having that self-compassion, noticing the changes in ourselves mentally and also physically, is that feeling of our bodies changing. I'm wondering what your relationship was like to your body through the pregnancy and now.
So I come from a history of eating disorder, body dysmorphia. I grew up in the industry, so it was always like, cool, if you're not this size and look a certain way, there's 50 other girls that are auditioning that are going to. And while I'm recovered from all of that and have been for some time now, the body dysmorphia thing never really left. And I will say that I had a lot of fear going into my pregnancy because I was like, is that all going to flare up? And what's my body going to be like after the fact? I did really well during my pregnancy, and I had a considerably easy pregnancy for what I hear from friends and other women. The last like month, that's when my face started reflecting it. And I was like, oh, I'm triggered. I can't look in the mirror. Like I was fine with the belly and everything. But like when I started seeing it in my face and like my feet were swelling, I was like, okay, I'm done. And obviously things don't just go back to normal right away. It's a process. The breastfeeding I was doing and like, I think how I worked out during my pregnancy, my body went back really quickly, in my opinion. But that's also because my child is sucking all of my muscle out of my body through my boobs. So there's a give and a take. But I will say that I felt like my body dysmorphia was like completely eradicated throughout this process. Like seeing what my body did and what it was capable of doing and what it's still doing. Like the fact that like, when we all got COVID in December, my boobs were like, oh, cool, we have an antibody for that. Let me just make it in this milk. Like, what the women's bodies are fucking wild. And men listening, I love you, but I've never realized like how much they can't do. It's like, wait, so we carry them and then we birth them and then we feed them. And it's like wild. And like my husband and I laugh about it all the time, but it's really miraculous. And if my body could do all of that, the least I could do for my body is be a little bit gentler and kinder to it. So maybe parts are a little squishier, but like I look at him and I'm like, I birthed a whole ass human. Like I'm a rock star. It really gave me a different perspective and appreciation for my body. And I wish I would have been a little gentler and kinder to it in the years past.
And just finally, what about mentally in your identity of who you see yourself being? How much has that shifted?
I have like continued to work on different projects that I have going on. I don't think that I've ever like lost my sense of self because I dove fully into motherhood. I will say that there are certain things on the business side that are taking a little more patience than I would like. And I was very gently reminded by my mother and a good friend of mine the other day that that's probably intentional by the universe right now, because this is the time I'm supposed to be enjoying these moments of him being so young that I'm never going to get to experience again. But I think mentally, it's really just been a bit overwhelming of all the things. Like I've had to be aware of and manage my anxiety, because at times it just feels so overwhelming. And I'll have to be like, well, after this appointment or after this interview, I can just take him for a walk and chill.
Well, with that being said, let the chill time start now.
Yes.
Thank you so much for your time, Gabrielle.
You're so welcome. Thank you for having me. This has been lovely.
You can read both of Gabrielle Stone's saucy memoirs, Eat, Pray, FML, and the follow-up, The Ridiculous Misadventures of a Single Girl, which are out now. She also has her own podcast you can listen to titled FML Talk.
Next time on Tough Love, best-selling cookbook author and certified health nut Jess Damick talks about creativity and chaos.
We had to make like, I'm not exaggerating, like 3,000 Christmas cookies, like all hand decorated.
And working with Martha Stewart.
Martha came running in and was like, we don't have enough cookies. And I related like so much to that moment of panic. And I was like, oh, this is never going to go away. It doesn't go away for anyone.
Tough Love is a podcast by me,
Linda Mariano.
It's produced by me, Amelia Chapello, and Adair Shepherd, with a special high five to Mike Williams. If you liked the show, why not rate and review on your podcast player now? And have you thought about joining our Tough Love world? You'll get extended interviews, my newsletter, and early ad-free episodes. Also, you can be part of our members-only series titled Tough Love Love Stories. So if you're looking for ways to support this independent show, then I'd love to have you as part of our family. The link is in the show notes with all the info for you to join our Tough Love team. Okay, that's it. Thank you. Love you. Ciao, ciao.